You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to NFL Live. Happy Friday. We're so glad that you're with us. Hey, a big week six coming your way. Game picks also will be coming from these people right here. Find out who they're taking, Browns, Steelers, and Packers, Bucks. It's Marcus Spears. It's Mina Kimes. It's Ryan Clark, and they will be coming your way very soon. But first, we got to get to the latest news around the league. For that, we bring in Field Yates. And, Field, you've got some news from the Patriots.
That's right, Laura. Unfortunately, it's the news that we have been hearing about all too frequently this NFL season, as the Patriots were forced to shut down their facility and cancel practice earlier today, Friday, after yet another player has been confirmed to have tested positive for COVID-19. It is offensive lineman James Ferentz, who has tested positive for the Patriots. He started in their last game, which was nearly 2 weeks ago, against the Kansas City Chiefs. But the timeline for the Patriots of late has been nearly 2 weeks ago. Cam Newton originally tested positive, the first positive COVID test they have had. Subsequently, they have gone multiple days without positive tests. And yet, here we are with yet another player on the Patriots that is now being placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. And while many are wondering if this is going to impact the game on Sunday against the Denver Broncos, it has already been postponed once. I am told, as of right now, and Laura, those are the operative words here, as of right now, that this game is remaining at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. Now, things could change tomorrow, but as things presently stand, the Patriots and the Broncos will play on Sunday as scheduled.
Yeah, it's a good point, Field. It's like we're living minute by minute at this point with all of this news, but we will keep you updated on it. In fact, you'll keep us updated on it. Talk to me about Odell Beckham Jr. What's going on with him?
Yeah, recently, Laura, the NFL issued an updated protocol that was distributed to all teams, nearly 75 pages in length. And amongst the issues that were brought up by the NFL is that if a player is experiencing any flu-like symptoms, he must immediately be sent home from the facility and basically has to spend 2 days away from the team while continuing to test negative for COVID-19. So while Odell has tested negative for COVID-19, it's no surprise that when he left yesterday from the team facility, we did not see him again today when the team took its final practice in advance of the Steelers game on Sunday. The team is listing him as questionable for the game. I do expect Odell Beckham Jr. to play on Sunday, but this is another wrinkle we must prepare ourselves for the duration of this season. When a player is experiencing symptoms, even if they are not positive for COVID-19, they're going to be forced to miss multiple days of work. This is the first and most prominent instance of this taking place under these brand new protocols, which I expect to be perpetually updated throughout the rest of the season.
You got a couple other things to tell us about too, right, Field?
Yeah, we do have a couple of other COVID-related bits here, Laura, as both the Colts and the Falcons finished today back in their practice facility, as the Falcons were out yesterday after the possibility of another positive within their building. It was a staffer, not a player. They returned to work today, which is good news, and they're going to play on Sunday as scheduled against the Vikings. The Colts, meanwhile, had a bit of a scare, as early this morning, around 6:30, they released a statement saying they had several positive test. Well, they ran the subsequent follow-up test, and it turned out that all four of those positive tests, one of which belonged to a player, proved to be false positives. They returned to work. They are currently scheduled to play the Bengals on Sunday. And again, that game is good to go. I think what we've learned, Laura, is that I'll believe, and we should all believe, that every game is good to go as scheduled about 5 minutes before it kicks off. That's the reality of football in 2020.
You're absolutely right. Hey, Phil Yates with us all show long, so he'll be keeping us updated on quite a few things, including some injury updates that you need to know. Let's get to another top story today. Le'Veon Bell has a new home after being released by the Jets earlier this week. He's taken his talents to Kansas City in the reigning Super Bowl champion Chiefs. So, yeah, the rich get richer. This Chiefs offense was already stacked, so now let's just add Le'Veon Bell in there and make it a whole lot better. It was a nice warm welcome from Patrick Mahomes on Twitter. You'll see this in a second. Bell was tweeting that he was joining the team, and then Patrick Mahomes said, yeah, no, we're glad to have you, as they do on Twitter. But he said, welcome, my brother. Let's get it. All right, so people on this show have told me you just throw out the Jets years for Le'Veon, and he's going to look to resurrect his career in Kansas City after struggling in New York. But during his tenure with the Steelers, which is what we should focus on, right, Bell was one of the league's best running backs, averaging 129 scrimmage yards per game. But since joining the Jets last season, that number has dropped by nearly 50 yards, and he's averaged just 4.1 yards per touch, ranking 84th out of 90 players with at least 100 touches over that span. So, Ryan, it's like they've got so many weapons. Where do they even start? How do you see the Chiefs using Le'Veon Bell in this offense?
Listen, getting Le'Veon Bell isn't going to change the entire show in Kansas City, but it'll help. It's kind of like Fridays on NFL Live. We always have you pulling the trigger, and then we got Marcus and Mina doing their thing, right? They're all pros, but then you add me into it. You got a versatile chess piece that you can use in many ways. It doesn't necessarily change how you do things or how great you are at it, but it adds pieces to it. And so you're still going to be Patrick Mahomes, and you're still going to have the running game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but you can use Le'Veon Bell in so many different ways that now you get to pick the best matchup. You get to pick the best place to go with the football. If you have a tight end like Travis Kelce and he's being doubled, if you have a safety that's leaning to Tyreek Hill, and now you have a linebacker that's not used to being in space, you hit Le'Veon Bell. If they want to pay attention to Le'Veon Bell, and now you have Travis Kelce matched up one-on-one, you go to him. This is not going to be about his production. This is not going to be about how many touches he can have. It's going to be about reinvigorating the play calling, the creativity, and having another chess piece to add to this already very efficient and good offense that for a little bit has gotten predictable.
Brian, I gotta disagree, because you are far more integral to this show than I believe Le'Veon Bell will be to the Chiefs offense. Listen, I know we're throwing out the Jets years, and I get it. I'm sure Jets fans would like to throw out the Jets years too, literally like all of the years. But the thing is, Le'Veon Bell's not going to look like he did in Pittsburgh, not just because of age, but Ryan, as you know, that Pittsburgh scheme is unique. That offensive line is unique. He does not look the same running behind, just as he did in New York. I don't think he's going to be a between the tackles back in Kansas City. He's a change of pace guy. As you said, he's a mismatch weapon. They can use him as a pass catcher. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire is an excellent pass catcher too. And I think actually it's been a little bit frustrating that he hasn't been used more in the passing game. I see him as depth. I think he's useful. Obviously he was low cost, but he doesn't change this offense for me at all.
I'm in the middle, and damn it, I can be in the middle on a Friday because two of my favorite people just talked about Le'Veon Bell and his role in the Chiefs offense. But here's the deal, right? This is where I'm gonna go. And we had a production meeting and I had some, but I'm gonna go here. By knee is the most important thing. Week to week, when Andy Reid game plans and Eric Bieniemy game plans, they'll find some type of matchup where they think they can exploit people with Le'Veon Bell or Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but Le'Veon Bell in particular, because he has shown the ability to get off in the slot as a wide receiver, not just a running back from the backfield. He's created a lot of mismatches. I was a victim of some of those mismatches that they created in Pittsburgh, and you best be sure that Andy Reid is going to go back to that tape and see how best used Le'Veon was. And then to Mina's point, the side I agree, this is not a resurrection of Le'Veon Bell's career. He won't have the usage that he needs in order to be resurrected as one of the top five backs in the league. But he'll have splash plays. He'll have things that are packaged for him to have success, especially with defenses, giving Patrick Mahomes all of the underneath stuff.
You know, the thing that really works about that is that you actually are in the middle Marcus. You were in the middle in between these two, so it works. You're in the middle. All right, literally in the middle. After the Chiefs play their next two games on the road, they'll return to square off with those Jets at Arrowhead, so maybe a little revenge game for Le'Veon Bell if he feels like he needs to have revenge. I don't know if he does. I'm just saying. We go back to Field Yates for the latest injury updates around the league. Field, let's start with a couple of key offensive players with the Browns.
That's right. We just talked about Odell a minute ago, Laura, but some good news for a couple of his teammates as quarterback Baker Mayfield and wide receiver Jarvis Landry are both listed as questionable to play on Sunday against the Steelers, although I do expect each of them to play. It's a ribs issue for Baker Mayfield, and Jarvis Landry's all sorts of banged up. He did return to practice, though, today on a limited basis, so we expect to see him on the field on Sunday. He's never missed a game in his career. How about some even better news? Julio Jones, who returned to practice on a limited basis today for the Atlanta Falcons, is off the injury report. The team is 0-5. They're desperate. They've got a new head coach. It's Raheem Morris. The good news is they'll have their most talented player, in Julio Jones, on the field against a Viking secondary that's really struggled so far this year. But on the other side of this game is the Vikings, and their offense will be without perhaps its best player so far this year in Dalvin Cook. No surprise, it's a groin injury that cost him the second half of last week's game against Seattle. The silver lining for Minnesota is that they've got an excellent starter to fill in, which is Alexander Mattison, third-round pick out of Boise State just a year ago. And here's some really good news for the Buccaneers. We're about as healthy as they've been all season right now with their wide receivers. It's both Chris Godwin and Mike Evans are off the injury report. Remember, they've basically not had either of those guys at 100% in any game so far this year. And when you're playing the Packers, you're certainly going to need as many healthy players as you can on the field. So good news there for the two Bucs wide receivers. But less good news in Philadelphia as, once again, they're shorthanded at wide receiver. Both Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson have been ruled out for week six. Alshon hasn't played at all this season. DeSean has been limited to basically just one game. And Laura, who would have thought 2 months ago that Travis Fulgham would be the Eagles' most important wide receiver? But here we are in week six, and the reality is he is their most important wide receiver in a game they must win against the Ravens on Sunday.
Yeah, that's wild. Not a good time to have injury issues on your offense when you're taking on the Ravens. Thanks so much, Field, for all that. And look, I realize this may sound dramatic considering their only loss is to the Chiefs, but what is going on with the Ravens' offense? We've pointed out that their offensive issues could have something to do with no Hayden Hurst or Marshall Yanda, but even Mark Ingram said this week they look like they're still trying to find their offensive identity. So maybe this game against the Eagles is the one where they finally find it this year. Mina, what would a get-right game look like for the Ravens?
Well, I think Mark Ingram kind of nailed it. They need to find their identity, and I personally think it needs to be a lot closer to what we saw last season. Yesterday, there was no Thursday Night Football, and I told Ryan Clark, I felt like my circadian clock was off. That's how I feel watching the Ravens' offense. It seems like their rhythm is off or their clock is off or something. So far this year, in the first half of games, 64% of their plays are designed passes. Last year, it was 50%, the lowest in the NFL. Now, I'm not saying just run the ball more. It's not as basic as that. But situationally, it feels like they're leaning too heavily on the pass, and the passing game just hasn't been creative enough.
Man, here goes Mina using these words that I don't know. She used it last night on Twitter, and I expressed to her, hey, Mina, I don't know what that means. And now here she goes again.
I thought an example would help.
That's why she's Donatello. Yeah, I mean, it was a great example, but I still don't know what the dang word means. But here's what I'll tell you. It feels to me like the Baltimore Ravens are out there practicing their pass game on game days. Like they're trying to go 7-on-7 or pass scale so they can figure out what will work in the playoffs if they have to lean on the pass. It's almost to me like when you see a dude like Blake Griffin was early on in his career in basketball when he could really dunk the basketball and get to the goal anytime he wanted. But people started to say, but can he shoot? Can he develop a jump? And then he'd crank up threes all game and end up with 18 points. And I'd be at my house like, dunk the basketball, bro. Nobody can stop you. Baltimore Ravens, run the football. Get back to that creative run game, Greg Roman, that had everybody in the league scratching their heads last year, and then use the play action off of that. Mina is absolutely correct, and her numbers support it, obviously, but they are passing the ball way too much, especially in situational football where the run game excelled last year. You have an identity. You don't need to find it. You just need to remember it. Run the rock.
Yeah, dance with the girl that got you there, okay? Yo. I like where you're going. Listen, Marcus, I got to hit you on this because the Ravens are 4-1, right? Their only losses to the Chiefs. Are we being too harsh here on them?
No, because I keep telling everybody that we have to keep these things in context when we talk about these teams. The bottom line is we are not judging the Ravens on having a good season. We are judging the Ravens based in their opportunity and ability to get to a Super Bowl and win one. And in order to do so, I'm with Ryan and Mina on that point as far as getting more creative, getting back to your identity. But this passing game is going to have to evolve. And I hope it's what Ryan is saying. Think about this. Think about how good the Ravens are if they practicing damn football in real games against real teams that ain't practicing football and trying to win the game. All right? So, look, they'll be fine and everybody will be excited about the regular season. But the point for the Ravens is this. In order for them to become a Super Bowl winner, in order for them to have the success that they have the ability to have with this quarterback that they have in his prime, they need to develop this passing game. So they better hurry up. Greg Roman better hurry up, the offensive coordinator for the Ravens. Lamar better hurry up. Mark Ingram better hurry up. Marquise Brown. All of these guys better hurry up and figure out how, when they get in a shootout against Patrick Mahomes or potentially in a Super Bowl against Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or Tom Brady or Drew Brees, how they going to put points on the board in case they get behind.
Yeah, listen,
That's what I got to say about that, damn it.
There you go. And I don't think we're predicting some sort of offensive back and forth with Carson Wentz necessarily. But let me just point this out, guys.
My circadian rhythm was off.
Yeah, the circadian rhythm is off in this segment because I'm trying to say something and you guys keep talking. Hey, Carson Wentz really struggled with his accuracy this season. He ranks second to last in off-target percentage behind only Mitchell Trubisky. So that's not good.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
There's no shortage of intriguing matchups between the Bucs and Packers Week 6, but keep your eye on the trenches. Green Bay ranks first in pass block win rate, while the Buccaneers ranks first in pass rush win rate. Aaron Rodgers can become the first player to throw multiple touchdowns with no interceptions in each of his team's first five games of a season in NFL history. And Tom Brady has five career wins against teams that are 4-0 or better, tied with Drew Brees for the most by any quarterback in the Super Bowl era. So this one kind of tough to pick, and you can see it here as our crew has Mina and Ryan taking the Packers. Marcus, the only one on the Bucks there, so we'll get to that in a moment. Time for some smart lineup decisions informed by IBM Watson. And want to point out, too, Field Yates reported this earlier in the show, but Mike Evans and Chris Godwin both healthy for the Bucks. That's the first time this season that both of these guys have been available. And Devontae Adams should be available for the Packers. So tons of offensive weapons and firepowers for these two GOAT quarterbacks on either side. Marcus, you're on the Bucks. Why?
Well, I didn't plan on getting this news before we talked about this game, but this is wonderful news for my pick. Listen, this is Tom Brady, okay? Number one, the Bucs have been shooting themselves in the foot with penalties, bad penalties, personal foul penalties. I felt like both games, even the game against the Saints and against Chicago, they had an opportunity to win. Chicago defense played lights out. The Saints made some offensive plays and did their thing. But when I look at this Tampa team, I'm going to stay where I've been with them. I think they are the most complete team in the NFC. And us waiting for Tom Brady and this offense to get good is almost waiting for the ice cream man, where you know he's coming every day. At some point, there will be an explosion of success offensively, and it could be this week based on the new information I got about Mike Evans and Godwin, that they'll get their thing going. And once they get that going, this defense, to me, is already Super Bowl and championship caliber.
I don't know about that, Marcus. I want to be with you, but I don't know.
What?
I mean, the one thing about the ice cream, man, you can kind of hear them coming around the street, right? You hear the little song, all the kids run into the house, they ask mom and dad for 75 cents or a dollar, and they try to get their favorite ice cream. It ain't that type of party in Green Bay, right? Because the guy on the other side is the real ice cream man. And I'm talking about like Master P, ice cream man, right? The whole total different kind. Like when Aaron Rodgers is playing the type of ball that he is playing right now, when you have Aaron Jones in the backfield playing the way he's playing, you're going to need the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to be great up front. They're going to have to establish a running game. They're going to have to make sure they protect Tom Brady. The two games that they've lost, Tom Brady's been pressured 10 times by both the Saints and the Bears, and we watched him make mistakes. Now you have the Smiths on the outside, and the only way to stop them is to win up front for the Bucs. But to me, this game is on Aaron Jones, what he can do against Levante David, against Devin White, and if he can play well, and now you get the pass game going from there, I look for the Green Bay Packers to win. And the ice cream man might come next week, but he's going to have to come to a 500 team in Tampa, and you know when it's hot, that ice cream melt fast.
I don't even know who the ice cream man is at this point, or who's getting served, or fast served, or whatever. But I'll tell you this. The revelation we just got about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, it's scary. But if I'm Tampa and I want to win this game, and I know I picked Green Bay, I actually don't think it's about those wide receivers. Because Jair Alexander, who, Ryan, I know you're a fan of, he's done a terrific job shutting down number one wide receivers. Those corners are fine. The problem in Green Bay is they cannot stop the run. That's where they're softer than ice cream, all right? Anyone can run over them. I would not be surprised if Ronald Jones, who, by the way, leads the NFL in yards after contact, he is breaking tackles like crazy. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big game. I wouldn't be surprised if Cameron Brate has a big game. That's another area where the Packers struggle, defending tight ends. It might be those names rather than some of the sexier ones that thrive if Tampa Bay pulls this off. Add a bonus, you keep Aaron Rodgers off the field.
Hey, let's take this right to the ice cream truck. This game features Football Power Index's second best offense, which is the Packers, against their number one rated defense, which is the Buccaneers. But really interesting, Ryan pointing out there, what if the Bucs end up being a 500 team? I wonder if people start to panic a little bit. We'll find out. Hey, here's what the Bucs division looks like in the NFC South. The Saints, Bucs, and Panthers all with 3-2 records. The Falcons, of course, they have not won a game. So an important one for those 3-2 Panthers taking on the 4-1 Bears. Let's dive into this one. Ryan, what are you watching in Panthers-Bears?
I'm watching for Teddy Bridgewater to keep ascending, for Teddy Bridgewater to keep showing the entire NFL that he deserves to be a starter in this league. I talked to Joe Brady last week, and he was just so excited at the progression of Teddy Bridgewater, how he's using all of his wide receivers. Anderson, you also have DJ Moore out there, also working in Samuel in the backfield, Mike Davis. I love what Teddy Bridgewater is doing, and Teddy Two Gloves is showing us that he deserved to be an NFL starter all along.
I am so excited to spotlight Robbie Anderson exhibit, at this point, 3,000 of a guy who's thriving after leaving Adam Gase in New York. Because they're using him as a true wide receiver. It's not just running go routes anymore. Slants, curls, comebacks, outs. He does it all. It's why he has a 76% catch rate. He has been a star for Carolina.
I feel like a lot of the conversation got lost about how good the Monsters of the Midway are on defense because of Mitch Trubisky and all of his L's. This defense is for real. Khalil Mack showed up against the Bucks. Akeem Hicks, Fuller causing a fumble in that game as well. Eddie Jackson on the back end. They are playing well. Trevathan is coming along. He wasn't having that much success early. Roquan Smith. They had a get-right game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I expect them to carry it forward.
Yeah, listen, if you're a quarterback that likes your QBR, don't go play the Bears because they're holding opposing quarterbacks to the second lowest QBR in the league this season. Only the Colts rank ahead of them with that really good defense. Let's see how much more ice cream we can talk about in this show. All right, let's talk about some NFL teams and players and if they are who we thought they were at the beginning of the season. So, Marcus, are the Colts who you thought they were?
No, damn it. And it's because I thought Phillip Rivers would not throw interceptions, okay? It all boiled down to Phillip Rivers taking care of the football and not turning it over. This was a team built around their offensive line. They wanted to run the football and have a lot of success offensively. Phillip Rivers was given $25 million. Frank Reich said, man, all you got to do is not turn it over and we'll win games based on our run game and our defense. And what does Phillip Rivers do? He turns it over. They are not who I thought they would be, Laura, because Phillip Rivers don't care about the football no more.
I'm sorry to hear it for you, Marcus. How about this, Ryan? Are the Vikings who you thought they were?
No. You know why? Because I came on shows and I said, the Vikings will win the NFC North. And when they win the NFC North, Kirk Cousins is going to ascend and be an NFC championship quarterback. I'm so smart. I did my offseason study and this is what I see. And I was dead wrong. I was flying all high. They're going to win the NFC North. Watch the run game. Whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop. Blase blah. And I was wrong. They absolutely stink. They are 1-5. They cannot finish away at 1-4. They can't figure out a way to win a game. Kirk Cousins hasn't played well. And then when he finally realized Justin Jefferson was alive, now they can't get stopped defensively. Danielle Hunter isn't there. And I am so mad because I sold my whole football soul the whole offseason that they were going to win the North and be a contender, and they're not even going to be in the playoffs.
Mina, is Jared Goff who you thought he was?
First, I'm a little uncomfortable with how much Ryan's nerd voice sounds like my normal voice, just putting that out there. I think that Jared Goff has vastly outperformed expectations, my own in particular. Look, that offense, like, it's not that hard to execute. He has the lowest air yards per attempt in the NFL, but he is executing it to perfection. He looks like 2018 Jared Goff, and 2018 Jared Goff went to the Super Bowl. Credit to him, that offensive line that's also playing much better, and I think better than anyone expected because they didn't really do much on the personnel side. The Rams offense is a quiet monster in the NFL right now, and Jared Goff plays a big part in it.
Ryan, I've got a request coming in into my ear right now asking for you to do the rest of the show in that nerd voice. So if you can just continue on that
listen,
way.
Listen, Laura, if that's what you need, I can do that. I can do that, okay?
I don't know if it's really a nerd voice or if it's just like a cartoon voice. Anyway, we'll break that down later. Now to someone who unfortunately is looking like the guy some thought he was struggling this season, Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, he did miss a couple of weeks with an ankle injury. Basically, his entire team's been hurt, so that's certainly part of this. But the numbers have not been good for Jimmy G, especially this year versus last year. The numbers much better last year. Now, he's been worse in QBR this year, completion percentage and yards per attempt. In fact, his QBR and completion percentage are the fifth worst among quarterbacks with at least three starts this season. It's also worth noting he has no guaranteed money left on his contract. So let's just get real dramatic here. Mina, is this a must-win game for Jimmy Garoppolo?
It is, and this isn't going to help my image after that nerd voice comment, but I'd like to pull up a chart that I think is quite telling about Jimmy Garoppolo. It's a scatterplot, but okay, look at this, though. At the bottom, it's average pass length. So Jimmy has the third shortest average pass in the NFL since 2019. At the top, going up, interception on the y-axis, interception rate. Typically, when you're not throwing it very far, you don't get picked a lot. That's why you see Drew Brees in the lower left. Jimmy has the fifth highest interception rate and the third lowest average pass. Doesn't take a nerd to understand why that's such a bad thing. Laura, oh, stop it. Oh, stop it. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Because here's the thing. Kyle Shanahan's offense for quarterbacks, it's like bumper bowling. You should just be able to roll the ball down and knock down pins. But last week, Jimmy Garoppolo was taking that ball and chucking it across the bowling alley.
That's a good one.
You got one job, man. Do not turn the football over. And that's what he's been doing. I hate you guys.
That's a good one.
Ryan definitely bowls with the bumpers up.
Who's next?
Ryan, go ahead.
I'm nervous. Well, listen, I'm just going to hold this after Mina did that great presentation just so I can validate the reason I'm on this show. With all that genius stuff that she just
is
brought
that,
up.
What kind of flex is that? Ryan Clark.
It was a scatter plot.
I'm sorry. I'll put it back. I'll put it back.
Vince Lombardi trophy? Excuse me.
Hey, guys, can I answer my question? I'm answering the question. I'm part of the show here. Okay, so check it out. I don't think this is a must-win for Jimmy G, because we already knew who he was. Jimmy G's a Jag, and y'all know what a Jag is. That's not his initials, because I think his middle name starts with R. It's just a guy, and that's what he is. Jimmy G's the perfect quarterback on a team where everything is going right, where you have this great defense that's getting stops, that's creating turnovers, where you have a running game that can get you 300 yards in the NFC Championship against the Green Bay Packers. That's the type of team Jimmy G needs to be on. Let me get it to Kittle. Let me find guys. Let me find Deebo Samuel. Find these guys to make extra yardage. He's not the dude you hand the ball to and say, Jimmy, today we're not supposed to win. Take us to the promised land. That's not how he works. And so to me, I think the people in that organization understand what's around him, what he's dealing with, and know that this is not the time for Jimmy G to go out and do it by himself.
I wish we could see what it said.
I'm going to put my Lombardi trophy up. I just wrote it down.
It looks like there's nothing on that paper.
Anyway, I know. I drew a Lombardi trophy because I don't have one, damn it. But let me answer the question, okay? This is what we went through all last year. All last year, every show with the San Francisco 49ers was, can Jimmy G, do you trust Jimmy G? Mina, that is hilarious, by the way. I'm going to acknowledge that.
This is for go-karting.
All right, so...
That's incredible.
All right, y'all.
We're going to compare trophies.
We at work.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Finish.
Okay.
Jimmy G.
So do you trust Jimmy G was the question all year long last year. And I said, no, I don't until I see him do it. Now he's in a position where he has to carry this team. Mina just told you, everything was set up for Jimmy G to have success. And it reminds me of the question we're asking about Baker Mayfield right now. If it's all on you, can you do it? I don't think Jimmy G can, y'all.
Yeah, we are going to ask that question about Baker Mayfield a little later on in the show. But I do want to say, guys, because listen, we've had a lot of fun here, but the offensive line is still a problem for the Niners, too. Jimmy G has taken a sack on 10% of his dropbacks. That's the highest rate in the league.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Huge one on Monday night, and also some big games in Week 6 on Sunday. And so this one, the Browns and the Steelers, a big matchup in that division in the AFC North. Banged up Baker Mayfield, but still says he's going to play despite the rib injury. In fact, he said this week, Mama Aunt Ray's no wuss. So he'll be ready to go for this one. Maybe his stiffest test in the season against this Blitzburg defense that's been quite good for Pittsburgh. So let's look at our picks here. What do we have coming? Oh, we're going to see him, I promise. Yeah, there's Mina. She's on the Steelers. Ryan's on the Steelers. And Marcus is also on the Steelers. I wanted someone to pick the Browns, but nobody wanted to do it for me. So that's where we're at here. Oh, someone's getting a phone call. That would be the Browns on line one calling Mina Kimes saying, why didn't you pick us? Because we really wanted you to pick us. Appropriate in this show that somebody would call on the phone. Mina, what is the deciding factor in picking the Steelers for you?
That was our bosses, actually, and they said, stop talking about ice cream. This is a football show. For me, it is that Steelers offense, because here's the thing. The Browns defense has not been great, in particular the pass defense. They have the best pass rusher in football, in Myles Garrett, but what Pittsburgh does so well is they get the football out quickly. Ben's actually getting out quicker than any quarterback in the league right now, and I think they'll be able to use that to neutralize Myles Garrett and company. Their playmakers are incredible. Obviously, Chase Claypool broke out in a huge way, but every week it's a different guy. He's spreading the football around. Some weeks it's Juju, some weeks James Washington. They're really hard to defend. This isn't a very efficient offense. And what do we say about the Steelers going into this season? All the offense has to do is be efficient because the defense is so good.
Yeah, Marcus, I feel like this always ends up coming back to, can Baker Mayfield put the game on his shoulders? Can he win it when it matters most? So answer that question for me. Do you trust Baker Mayfield in a big spot here?
Laura, not as of right now, but I will say this. Baker has managed this offense very well. It's just been in the fourth quarter when they needed plays. He hasn't shown the ability to do that yet. And in this game in particular, you want to find out if your quarterback can carry you one or two or three times this year when the run game isn't there, when all things aren't on schedule and you aren't having the success up front that you're normally having. And that could quite possibly be what we see from Pittsburgh, the ability to stop the run and say, Baker Mayfield, Kevin Stefanski is going to say, Baker, we have to have you go out and win this game. And I think not only myself, a lot of people that's watching the Cleveland Browns, including their fans, want to know that. I believe Baker is playing with confidence because his offensive coordinator and head coach, Kevin, is putting him in great positions. And this game may be a telltale as far as where the Cleveland Browns can ultimately go. Because if it comes down to that and Baker Mayfield delivers, then we start having a whole different conversation about the Cleveland Browns.
Isn't this about whether or not we believe in the Cleveland Browns or whether the Cleveland Browns believe in themselves? I mean, this is a 4-1 team, and you saw Odell Beckham Jr. on the sideline saying 4-1, 4-1. But are they truly there? If Cam Haywood, if Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt step up and stop the run, will Kevin Stefanski have the answers? And also, if you look offensively, if the Pittsburgh Steelers block up Myles Garrett, what can the Cleveland Browns do on the outside with all of those weapons? I think right now we all believe in Pittsburgh, not only this year, but just historically. I believe the Cleveland Browns still have more to prove, and that's what this weekend will be about, because the winner of this game says, you know what, we can be atop the AFC North, not the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, our Football Power Index thinks the Steelers will win this one, so it's with you guys, but the Browns will then be favored in each of their next five games after that. So even if they lose this one, they could go on to have a really good record at the end of the day. Guys, it's time for one more thing before we go, and for that, we begin with somebody. Ryan, you're going.
Me? Listen, I'm going with Dak Prescott. My one more thing is this. Be careful what you wish for. So many times we kind of down Dak Prescott and say why he shouldn't get a certain contract, why he can't get Russell Wilson money. But he has been a dynamic quarterback. He has been stability at that position. And with Andy Dalton going against Kyler Murray, we might see what dynamic looks like and what dynamic doesn't.
This may be the last analysis I get to give America because this show today, but I'm going to tell you this. The Cowboys need to make sure that they feed Zeke Elliott. I was not on board about running the football extensively, but now I am. I've been convinced by my colleagues, and it's my colleagues' fault that I won't have a job after today. Peace, y'all.
Well, you thought you weren't going to hear any Jets-Dolphins analysis today. Well, here I am. I'm praising the Dolphins' defense, which ranks 7th against the pass, according to Football Outsiders' DVOA metric. Credit to what Brian Flores has done with that unit, especially since Byron Jones has come back. They've been great on third down. These are the strides they need to make going forward, and I've been impressed.
Hey, we all feel like proud parents last night when Arch Manning made his debut on ESPN. He's not our son, but we really love him here. He is a Manning, however. 21 of 26 for 241 yards and a touchdown. Showed a lot of that skill that he has. He's athletic. He can't just throw it. So he's got a whole bunch that he can be excited about. And Marcus Spears, I want to know, did you ever draw a trophy on a whiteboard on national television, hold it up, and there was nothing on the whiteboard?
Nope.
I think
and like
you
I
did.
Said, it's Ryan Clark.
I thought it was on purpose.
He put his trophy up.
He didn't have one.
I drew it.
I thought that was the joke.
And the lighting would not shine right.
Ryan, where is your Lombardi trophy?
Oh,
yeah, of course.
Board.
It's right there.
It was a blank board.
I love it. At the end of the day, Mina Kimes has
this
the best
trophy,
trophy of all of us, and apparently it's for a go-karting slick trick. We'll see you next week on NFL
Live. Ryan, Mina, good luck to y'all in the future. Hope to see y'all down the road.